Have I ever? This is probably the most embarrassing of those entrance stories.
Yeah,
I was down in South London once. Went down to some party that was taking place in some kind of swanky bar where there was a doorman on the front and a charge. I think it was something mental, like a tenner to go in. It was crazy. It was ludicrous. I don't know what I was doing down there. And I was in the queue.
We'll establish what you mean by swanky later, because that could be.
And it was a posh place.
Was it?
And so there's a queue outside, and there was one of these doormen who thought it was like kind of Studio 54. He was like sort of, you know, choosing people who could come in. Yeah, you two come in now. You know, I've been there for ages, obviously.
Oh,
I was
no.
on my own because I got there late.
And clogged.
Exactly.
I've dressed up for this.
And there were these two girls next to me. I'm thinking, if I'm in a queue, I've told you before, if I'm in a queue and if I'm stuck with two girls, you know, I'm thinking, oh, what a great opportunity, you know, use the old merchant charm.
yeah.
And so I'm there and I'm sort of thinking, I'm sort of, you know, and I kind of sort of give them a nod or whatever, you know, a wink.
Yeah.
And they're loving it.
Yeah. They move to the back.
They're putty in my hands, Rick, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, to really seal this off, I'll get us in. Like, I'll sort of skip the queue. So the guy's sort of coming along, he's picking people off, the doorman. And I just grabbed him. I just grabbed him like that. And I said it so everyone could hear. Right. And I thought this was brilliant. I said to him, how much is it? He went, 10 quid. I went, I'll give you 7. That was my bribe. I'll give you 7. That's the whole £3. No, that can't be right.
No.
No, he must have said a fiver, and I said, I'll give you 7.
Yeah.
That makes more sense, doesn't it?
That's giving him a £2 incentive.
Yeah, a £2 incentive.
I said, I'll give you 7, you can make up the 10.
Exactly.
You can, if you let me in, you can put in 3 yourself, mate. That never works, does it?
He said to me, I can't be bothered. I'm just gonna have a kip, I think. I'm so tired.
Was it percentages that put you off? That
frazzled me initially.
I mean, it's a funny anecdote when you're giving him £2.
Yeah.
It's even funnier when you're getting him
when
to
he's
put
paying
up stuff.
Me as well.
Oh, I love it. Right, we're gonna play a record. Then we're really gonna concentrate. XFM 104.9, Ricky Gervais Show.
Steve Merchant's also involved. Oh, can't go to bed now.
Oh no.
Like that Steve trying to impress a girl in a queue, offered the bouncer 2 quid for himself if he could go to the front of the queue.
Oh man, that was so embarrassing.
2 quid.
I tried to bribe. Did I tell you that, Carl? I tried to bribe the bouncer. He was coming out. He was like the bouncer of the Met Club, the Met Bar or something.
Tenor in.
He was choosing. No, he wasn't. He was picking people off, right? That was it. He was picking people off, and he was going, you can come in, you can come in. I got chained to a couple of girls. I thought, hey, I'm in here. I'm sorry, dear. And I thought, I'll act flash. I'll try and bribe my way into the club. The guy was walking past. I cornered him. I went, wee, how much is it to go in? He said, fiver. I went, I'll give you 7. And £2. I thought, because the problem I had was I didn't want to go straight to like a tenner.
No.
Because if he accepted 7, I didn't want to be that. You know,
no.
I didn't want to waste
money.
Right,
so
I thought,
Steve.
I thought
right,
we
Steve.
Could at least haggle.
It was the term. Is that frugal? What is the term for that? Thrifty? I know.
But I'm resenting this because you are trying to create this kind of, this lies, this myth that I'm somehow, you know, like that I'm somehow cheating
careful.
My money
yeah.
or that I'm not a great lover. You know what I mean? And that's sort of, and I'm like, it's annoying me. Frankly.
Oh, so, dear.
Carl, do you think, and maybe Ricky as well, do you think you know much about DJing for like, you know, the sort of the wedding party or maybe someone's 18th? Oh, really?
Mm.
Okay, let me just offer a little hypothesis for
go
you.
Then.
All right, the buffet's been served, right?
Yeah.
People have done some speeches,
yeah.
like it's a wedding do.
Yeah.
So you've already played some records early on, you've stopped for food,
yeah.
you've just played some light backing music in the background while the food's been served. You want to get the party rocking again, what do you kick off with?
It depends. I've already got it down to 2 or 3 records.
Okay, I'd like to hear what they are.
Well, I've got it down to Earth, Wind & Fire.
Right.
That'd be great, it, you know, if there's, you know, depending on, or you want to go a bit modern, I'd probably start off with sort of Will Smith.
Well, careful, Rick, I've got to bear in mind, it is a wedding do, so there's people from age 8 to 80. You got cater to every market.
Okay.
Kyle, what about you?
See, this was back in 88, so...
Yeah.
Kylie.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what the definitive track is?
Go on.
Oh, What a Night, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Ding, ding, ding. People don't realise what it is exactly. It's straight away. Ding, ding, ding. Bow, down, 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 down. I can't actually play it. But,
record,
oh, what a night. Late December back in 60. That leads you straight into a 70s medley, and everyone's loving that. I'm thinking Bee Gees. There's going to probably be some kind of ABBA track, Dancing Queen, all going to storm. You're turning your noses up. I can tell you this, that we got bookings endless. People are going, you're amazing. I don't know how you do it.
I wouldn't have got up. I would have sat there.
Well, you might be, because you're one of those grouchy, you're one of those moody teenagers. Oh, I'm not going to dance to this. I'll tell you, the old ladies would have been up. the people with a decent bit of musical taste would be up.
No, the Ricky first Gervais person to get up is a fat lady in a dress with bad ankles and a little kid who's got problems and he's in a little DJ.
See, the problem with you two is you're not catering to the market. You're trying to be all sort of bohemian and kind of off, you know, teach people about music and stuff. There's no place for Kylie, not at a mobile disco. Far too avant-garde. All right, kick it in. Grease Megamix.
Play a record.
Come On Eileen. Have you got Come On Eileen? Play that.
What are you going to play?
Love Shack.
Coldplay.
Excellent. Yellow.
Well, you'd never
It's the
that.
Excellent single by Coldplay. It's Yellow. Oh, Yellow. That's Yellow by Coldplay.
We're talking about embarrassing stories and stuff. And I don't know if I've told this on this radio before. Have I told you, Carl? I'm not sure. But this was when I was working at the BBC. This is not even long ago. And I'd moved to London and I was fairly new in London. And I was working at the BBC and I had this BBC hire car. And I've never told it. If there's anyone listening who works for BBC, I don't know if I can still get in trouble for it. But this BBC hire car. And it was like I'd been ferrying kind of actors and people and production people around all day in this car. And I was driving back. It was quite late. It was about sort of 7 or 8. And I was driving back and I pulled in to get some petrol to fill up the car every day. And I went into this garage to fill up some petrol and I was there. And this two blokes came in a white van, right? They pulled into the forecourt and I was filling up the car and they went, "Hey, do you want to buy a couple of speakers?" And I said, "Yes, I do."
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you the reason. It was like I was so flattered that they thought I'd be the kind of bloke who would A, need some kind of classy speakers and B, would like to buy them on the sly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought, they like the
fact They've seen I look a bit of a hustler.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm a street sort of guy. You can see by the way I use my walk.
Exactly. Yeah. So I couldn't believe my luck. So they drove behind the garage, the little sort of garage bit at the back, and I went around there, sort of casually went around there, sort of locked the car, went around there. They went, "Yeah, open the back. You had these speakers in there." I said, "Are you sure these aren't knocked off, mate?" He went, No. "We work for Dixon's." This is a story he spun me. "We work for Dixon's, right? And we're delivery men. And if we make a delivery and the person's not there to sign for the goods, then we have to bring them back to the warehouse. But if we can sell them on the way back..."
Yeah.
"Then that's really good for Dixon's."
Dixon's must love that.
And instead of thinking, "Are you sure some kind of troubleshooter didn't..." I mean, did someone going to go into Dixon's and go, "Yeah, you're not getting in the garage forecourt market?"
John Harvey Jones.
Exactly.
"Get a couple of lads in a white van."
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I sort of bought this story and I was a little bit dubious and I went, "Right, let me hear them then." And he wired them up to the car stereo and boom, 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 they're playing. So it was some groovy hip hop. I was thinking, great, these guys know what I'm into.
Yeah.
And he's giving me the talk and stuff. And, I said, "I'm a bit worried these are knocked off." He went, "No, listen, we got a bloke at Dixon's who can confirm this is fine, right? Phone him up, use my mobile, right? And quote this reference number, right?" So I phone out, they go, "Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee." And I goes, "Yeah." I go, "Hi, some guy's here in a garage forecourt trying to sell me some speakers. Just wanted to check." He went, "It's fine." I went, should I just read the reference number or whatever?" He went, "If you want." And X14, and I'm like, "Yeah, it's fine."
Yeah.
Okay.
You know that was, don't you? That was actually Mr. Dixon himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, you know, they sound great. They're giving me for a knockdown price. I say they were like 400 quid. They were like 200 quid or something. It was a good bargain. I was in the market for some speakers as well.
Yeah.
So while they were loading
them in... It's all kosher. I phoned Dixon.
Exactly. I phoned Dixon. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So while they're loading them in the back of the BBC hire car, right, I'm in there paying for the petrol, right? And the guy serving goes, "Ee." Oh, you're right. He goes, "What were you doing around the back with those blokes?" Right? Because obviously there's security cameras filming this whole transaction, right? And he goes, "What are you doing around the back?" And I went, brilliantly, I went, "There's some old mates. Some of my mates were just having a chat and that." He went, "Oh, right, okay." Like, giving me obviously the evil eye. So I went back to the van. So I'm in the car now and I'm driving with one of the blokes who's in the van with me because I didn't have the money on me. So I had to go to the cash point to get the cash, right? So I'm driving with him and the other guy's following me in the van. And he was like a northerner, like you, and he's giving it all right, yeah, you know. I tell him, my girlfriend's a DJ. She's got some of these speakers. They're fantastic, da da da. And he's giving me this. And then my mind starts working. Now that I've got a bit of time to think, I'm thinking, wait a minute. This all sounds a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
It dawned on me, Rick.
You're no fool, are you? You're streetwise.
Exactly.
You're streetwise, Steve.
Not only that, I was thinking, how am I going to get them home? I've got to drop the car off at the BBC. How am I going to get these huge speakers back to where I live?
And how can I pay for them? Because I've just spent £100 on Find the Lady.
Exactly.
With a couple of blokes in the square. Yeah. It seemed like a fair game. Some of his friends were winning.
But so I explained to him, I said, I can't get them back to like Brixton where I was living at the time. He went, "Don't worry, give us an extra 20 quid. We'll take them home for you."
Oh, that's good. Delivery. They do a whole service, you see. And there's also a backup guarantee. Did they have the guarantee, the 3-month guarantee?
They didn't.
No.
But I said, "I'm not sure about that." He went, "Well, why don't you put them in a cab, send them back, and your housemates can collect it?" I was like, "Oh, no, there'd be no one in." And I was beginning to sort of get a bit conscious of, like, maybe this was a bit of a scam after all. So I pulled into like a little side road. I said, "I'm not sure I'm into this now, actually." He went, "What are you talking about? It's 200 quid for a pair of speakers. It's a bargain. You never get a bargain like this, mate." I'm going, "Not too sure, actually. I don't think I want them." He went, 150 quid, 150 quid, mate, 150 quid. I went, "No, he's 100 quid, 100 quid now to you. thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like the kind of work that Dixon's would be doing.
Dixon's don't do that when I go in.
This is it.
Dixon's never negotiate in that way.
When I go, they look around and I leave. They go, where are you going?
Exactly.
I go, we'll have anything then. Have anything for a
quid. So I stopped the car and the white van pulled up behind me with his mates in.
Sure.
And I said, can you get him out? I'm not interested. And he went, oh, 100 quid, mate. Are you? And he was just going, you tosser, you obviously want some speakers. And he was having a go at me. So I was carrying the speakers out and putting them back in the white van. And he was just shouting at me. He was going, 70 quid. I said, 70 quid from 200? This is ludicrous.
You realise that wasn't Dixon's policy then?
Exactly.
They don't at usually shout, moment, you tosser, as you leave the, as you leave the shop and walk down Camden High Street. They're exactly. Not usually shouting, you tosser.
You should have took the offer of, like, the monthly payments over on at the moment.
So I eventually I put them in there and I sort of knocked the deal on the head and I got back in my car and they were in theirs and I just looked in the rearview mirror and they were punching the dashboard like with aggression and venom like we let that deal slip through our fingers and I've never been so terrified in my life. I just sat there and I was just thinking, oh my God, all I was thinking now is what if I go back to the BBC and they go, we've had a call from the police, the man at the garage, he saw you doing a dodgy deal.
I love it. Yeah. Well, what you do is you put the hire car in a drain in your front garden and then go in and out of the toilet just pouring bleach down or Ajax and they never know.
Have you told, can you talk about your grandparents?
Well, my grandparents, of course, the thing about my grandparents, I have mentioned this before.
Yeah,
I
love this.
I think they've got about 3 teeth between them. It's unbelievable. My grandfather...
They're all their own, though.
He was in the RAF in the war, right? And he, for some reason, he had problems with his teeth and they pulled them all out.
Oh,
and
really?
They replaced them with a false set of false teeth. But during the wartime, I don't know whether this was just like what it was like during the war or just the 40s, but he had a kind of wooden plate put in with like some kind of fake teeth attached.
Oh no.
And he's never had that changed. So he's still got the wooden plate and about 3 teeth still hanging on it.
Oh.
It's just so he and my grandmother combined, they cannot eat anything that's kind of solid. So they will literally get up for Christmas dinner. They'll get up and they'll put the meat on like it's sort of 6 in the morning, go back to bed for the day, get up and eat it about 9 o'clock at night. And the best compliment you can have if you've cooked dinner for my grandparents is, oh, this is lovely. You can suck it away.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Imagine
why do they just liquidise it? Have a nice little roast smoothie.
They have done in the past.
Really? And a little apple crumble smoothie to follow.
If we take them out to eat, like at a restaurant or something, we've got to phone ahead to make sure there's fish on the menu.
Really?
Because they can only have fish. But then the bones, you see, that's a problem for them.
Well, you can take the bones out of fish, can't you, and sort of mash it up.
Yeah, but the eyes are going.
Steve,
as well.
Could I suggest the fish cake? It's already mashed. It's with the potato. It's in a crispy crumb, which doesn't hurt anyone, whether you got teeth or not.
Rick, can I
go on.
Make a little...
Yeah.
I just want to make a... Because obviously not everyone's as fortunate at Christmas, Rick.
No.
What about the vegetarians? What are they eating?
A nut cutlet.
What the hell
a
is
lovely
a
lovely little nut cutlet. Can't they have like tofu, but in the shape of a turkey?
But I love the fact that so often, you know, certainly your Linda McCartney veggie items, they always try to fool you into thinking it's the real thing. You know, some veggie sausages that they've injected with something so they'll taste like sausages.
Yeah.
Are we talking about when his dad said that? And then you told me something that I find amazing.
Oh, it's Christmas, obviously. I've got to go back to Bristol. I love seeing my family. Well, yeah, I do. But it means I'd see my grandparents who were, you know, brilliant people. I mean, lovely people, but mental. I mean, utterly mental. And they've taken now to, there must be sort of 80 a piece. And it is quite an old age, but they're fairly good health, relatively speaking. And they just spend their time in bed. I mean, that's all they do, is that's their profession. They've retired to go to bed. And they spend all their time in bed. I'll tell you what they're like. They're like that old guy. They're like all that old family in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, none of them had got up for like 25 years.
Yeah.
And they
you said that they go to bed and they go to sleep. But then when they wake up, what they do is put an extra pillow so they're slightly more upright. And that's them in the day.
That's their daytime thing.
But they get them cook and stuff.
What they do is they've got about 6 teeth between them. I mean, my grandmother needs false teeth, but refuses to go and have the old ones extracted in a false tooth fitted. So she's working with about 3 or 4 teeth.
Oh.
My grandfather had false teeth given to him during the war.
Wooden ones.
Well, it was plastic teeth on a wooden pallet, right, that sits at the top of the mouth. He's still got the wooden pallet, but most of the teeth have come off. So there's about 4 teeth left, 4 false teeth. He's got a set of false teeth that make him look like he needs false teeth. I mean, that's pretty bizarre.
Oh.
So the problem is that they have to get up. They get up about 7 in the morning to put on, say, you know, some beef or lamb, whichever they're going to cook. They put it on at 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, so that by the time they eat it at 6 at night,
eat, they can use the phrase, this is what a good meal is for my grandparents, if they can use the phrase, oh, that's lovely, you could suck it away. You could suck it away. Who wants that from a roast dinner? You may as well blend it up and serve it as a broth.
I don't want that phrase coming from old people without teeth.
No, indeed.
Because it must remind you of your rent boy days.
Exactly. It brings it all flooding back.
Oh, you know. God. Flooding's the word. Exactly. Should we play a record before we get really disgusting about your grandparents and blowjobs?
That is
the worst thing
we've said
ever...
the word blowjob far too many times today.
And with in the same sentence as you... I can't believe
it. Anyway.
And it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
You know, I said in the past to you, Rick, that my grandparents, so I love them dearly, but it's like for the last 30 years they've been waiting to die.
I know.
It's like they just sort of, it's like, you know, the novelty wore off of life. Just,
life in the 50s.
Yeah, they got kind of bored of it. Life, yeah, in the 40s it was brilliant. All sat around the old Joannas, the bombs fell, singing. They love that. The 50s, you know, that was great as well because that was the post war years. It was, you know, it was a bit tight in the pocket, but it was all right. Everyone pulled together. Then the 60s came along, all the crazy music, the funny hair.
Let's stay in bed.
Yeah, exactly. And they basically stayed in bed. And it was one Christmas when my grandmother said to my dad, what do you like for Christmas? What do you fancy for Christmas? And this must have been, well, I don't know, 20 years ago. She said, what do you fancy for Christmas, Ron? And he went, well, you know, I could do with a nice big kind of warm winter overcoat. She said, don't worry about that. She said, don't worry about that because your father will be dead soon. It's what you can have is. Meaning my granddad. Well, to be honest with you, my father's still waiting. Which is good news. Good news for my grandfather. Less good news for
he's
my dad.
He's freezing. He runs out. How is he today? He's fine. Okay. Oh, I'm freezing.
It is such a weird mindset, that. I think it's that, to me, is what sums up people from that older generation, the 40s and 50s. And it seems to me that you've got that kind of mindset. It's like you were born in the 30s. And whenever you talk of your childhood, it's like you had, like, a baked potato to take to school. And a stick as a Christmas
gift. The other thing is, I think that that sort of generation, it seems that the man is dependent on the woman.
Mm.
As a total dependent.
Oh, absolutely.
If she dies, he's done.
Yes.
Done for. Yeah. It just pine away. If he dies, she's got 30 years of pottering.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and going to, like, you know, the youth club and the church.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
It's sort of like that. It's sad. Of course, it's sad for them, but it's sort of not the end of their life.
No, sure.
And it sort of is the other way around. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
That's a little melancholy thought for
I know,
Christmas
I've really
time.
Brought it. You've brought it down. This isn't a nice show at all. This is terrible.
Well,
we're
going to
have people
really
just killing themselves.
Yeah. Listen, let me just tell you briefly, this is another example of how people can just exploit you and make fun of you when you're tall.
Yeah.
I was quite tall, I've always been like about 6'7" for quite a while now. And when I was about 16, I went to a big New Year's celebration in Bristol, where I come from. And everyone kind of congregates in this big sort of part of town, and there's all people dancing around, like in Trafalgar Square. And I was there, and I just picked up a balloon somewhere along the line, one of those kind of helium sort of balloons, and I was holding that, sort of dancing around. And these two girls came up to me, and I was thinking, yeah, okay, you know, it's New Year's Eve, brilliant, you know, that's my kind of party.
Yeah.
They came up, they went, hey.
Once a year.
And they said, you're going to be here for long? And I went, well, maybe. And they said, it's just that we've arranged to meet back at you in about an hour. I went, what do you mean? I went, well, it's just because we can see you wherever you are. Don't worry, you can move around and stuff. We'll see you with the balloon. Just arrange to meet some friends.
I love that. A landmark.
So, like,
pilots use that. And we're just coming in. When we see Steve Merchant, we'll be descending to Bristol Temple Mead.
What's really funny is New Year's Eve, Trafalgar Square, you've got a huge column, but they use Steve as, like, the meeting point.
Steve's got a huge column.
Brilliant, Rick. Well done. Award-winning comedy from Ricky Gervais.
Weren't you in a car park once?
Oh, no. It was New Year, and we were all gathering up. You know, like in Trafalgar Square at New Year, everyone gathers and they have a big kind of party and stuff. Well, in Bristol, they do something very similar on a smaller scale. And I was there one New Year's with my friends, and I picked up a balloon during the evening. You know, I don't know where I got it from, but I was holding this balloon. And these girls came up to me, and I thought, yeah, nice, nice. You know, maybe a little New Year kiss. They came up, they said, hey, are you going to be here for a while? And I said, well, yeah, I probably will. They said, it's just that we've arranged to meet back at you at midnight.
What do you mean?
Because I was so tall, I had a balloon. I was towering above everyone else. I said, what? They said, we're going to meet back at you at midnight. They said, don't worry, you can go about your business because we can see you wherever you are.
This is where Nelson's column is.
No. No, this is in Bristol.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
And so I'm sort of wandering around, and then at midnight, they
these two girls turn up again, and some of their, these lads come and meet them, and they're sort of laughing and joking. I'm thinking, oh, they're probably going to invite me back to a party. I watched them getting a cab. They went off, they had a wild night. But then I did have a balloon, so it was a great new year for me.
I did have a balloon! Oh!
You're going to tell us a little story about a
just
Volvo
passed
estate.
My test. Yeah. My parents had a big, big Volvo estate, and there's quite a big car to drive.
My parents didn't have a car.
But if you, I know you don't drive cars, Rick, no. But it's quite a big car to drive if you've just passed your test.
It's safer, isn't it?
It is very safe, that was the thing.
Yeah.
And I come from the West Country, obviously. There's quite a lot of windy lanes.
No, you're joking, do you?
They have cars there.
Well, here he comes. Blimey, Carl.
Learned on a tractor, automatic it was.
Do you want me to tell it or not?
Oh, don't do above the accent. Oh, no, I'm not a word. Oh, go on.
Oh.
Go on.
So I went to this party.
You never got him being from the north.
Not when he's telling an anecdote.
He's never telling an anecdote.
Oh, yeah, fair point.
Yeah, go on.
So I went to a party, and I was quite excited because I had the car, the motor, and there was a chick heading down to the party that I was like, you know, I had my eye on. And yeah. I thought, you know, now I've got a car and going to the party, it's going to be amazing, right? And various friends had said, like, can we get a lift? I thought, yeah, groovy.
Yeah, yeah,
I'll pick up the chick as well, who's a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
So cruising down to the party in the motor, you know, the Volvo estate, and there's nothing sexier than that. You know, slipping a little bit of Billy Joel on the stereo or whatever.
Oh,
something classy.
Don't go,
and maybe it was Billy Ocean.
Oh,
I think maybe it was quite a Billy.
Maybe it was get out of my dreams, get into my car.
Ideally.
Yeah.
So I get to the party, and inevitably it was one of those house parties where the chick that I had my eye on, she kind of was chatting to other guys and she wasn't really paying attention to me. And I was sort of
found out to get, was she again?
Oh, same old story.
Oh, Rick. They make me
they
laugh.
Know how to tease, don't they, the ladies?
Me laugh. Who are they kidding?
So I'd follow her like a dog, you know, from room to room.
Yeah.
And watch
quite
her.
Quite literally. Sometimes he was barking.
Yeah. And while, you know, just watch her while she talked to other blokes. And then, obviously, I wasn't, because I was driving, I wasn't drinking, so I was not really enjoying myself. And then somebody said, should we go and pick up Vera? And I thought, right, okay. And they went, Steve's got a car, let's all leap in there, we'll go pick up Vera. Mm. And this girl was like up for it as well, so I thought, brilliant, you know, I'll be back in the car with her, you know, away from all these lads. Yeah. One guy she had her eye on, he came as well. I was a little bit annoyed.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was in the car, so I'm driving down these country lanes, just driving along, and they're directing me, they're saying, go left here, go right. And then suddenly we stop, and he goes, one of them goes, just drive into that field, this pitch black field, right? And I'm sort of, well, it is my parents' car. Just drive in the field, Steve. I'm thinking, well, I don't want to, like, not seem like I'm a hard, cool, crazy kind of guy, because the chick's in the car. So drove the car into the field, they all leapt out, started running off into the darkness, shouting, Vera, 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 where are you? So I'm just sort of sat there in the car, waiting.
Wasn't Vera Lynn, was it? Because she likes to hide in fields.
Bizarrely, it wasn't. Right. It was just, I was just left in the car on my own with Billy Ocean, and suddenly out of the darkness they come back holding a Vietnamese pot-bellied pig that they had stole from a nearby farm.
Stole
and they knew that the pig was called Vera because someone knew the farmer or something. Anyway, so they got this pig, so now they're going, I'll put the pig in the back of the car, we'll take it back to the party, it'll be hilarious. I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm not sure I want a pig and all its, you know, piggy crap in the car, right, crammed in there. But they say, yeah, so obviously I'm thinking again, I don't want to look like I'm, you know, a nerd. You know, I'm terrified of that, Rick, ever happens.
Yeah. So you go, hey, bring the pig into the car.
Exactly.
No nerd.
Exactly.
Yeah, go on.
So now we drive off again. I've got this pig kind of screeching in the back of the car. And they say, stop again, let's do some cow tipping. And they do that old thing, you know, about the fact because cows sleep standing up, don't they? So you can push a cow over and stuff.
Yeah.
So they're having a wild time, hilarious. So this time, now we get to a sort of dead end in the road. And they say, well, turn around, let's go back to the party. And I'm thinking, fine. Try and do a 3-point turn in this very narrow country lane, right? Get the Volvo estate wedged horizontally across the road. Can't get it out. Just can't seem to sort it out. I don't know what. I'm panicking because there's a pig in the car, right? And local disgruntled farmers, right? People drunk, partying, probably off their head on some kind of weed, Rick.
Well, was it loads of blokes with, like, pitchforks and flaming torches
exactly.
Going, burn him. He's playing with our pig.
Exactly that. And so, that, do you know, I was so terrified that all I could think was they're going to have to send a helicopter to lower a magnet onto the top of the car to lift the car up and put it the right way around.
You used to read a lot of comics, didn't you?
Yeah. So, do you know what I started doing?
What?
Crying.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Why?
So started crying, just very slightly, started getting upset. And the other guy that the girl fancied, he had to get into the driving seat and sort it out for me by edging forward and backwards.
That's the worst bit of the whole story.
Yeah. Edging slowly back and forwards. He just sorted it out, just slowly, worked the car back round, and then we were off.
You're just gently weeping.
Just gently weeping in the back.
The bloke had just taken the bird that you saw from a distance.
Exactly.
That was basically your wife in your head by then.
Oh,
yes.
Wasn't it? I can't believe
it. We were happily married with a pig for a child.
Don't yeah. joke, that could happen.
I know.
The pigs come, if you like.
Sorry?
What?
What did you say? What did you say? What did you say?
When you do what, Carl?
What? What? What did you say? No, what did you say? Because I don't want to have to go to the Radio Authority again. You're what on. Did you say then? Just remember.
We are going out live, Carl.
Yeah, remember Tom Binns, right? What did you say?
What I'm saying is, why were they shouting Vera? Because pigs don't come to the name, do they?
Hey? You know, I don't know the ins and outs of a pig, you know, how to lure a pig into your trap.
Can I just tell you some very, very interesting things about pigs?
Please do.
Right. One, they have, everyone knows they have a corkscrew-shaped penis, right?
Yeah, a corkscrew-shaped yeah. penis. That's yeah. the tail, isn't it?
Two, they can't look up. They can't put their head back and look up, right? Three, they can have a 30-minute orgasm. Yeah.
Rick, is it only pigs that have got a corkscrew-shaped penis?
No, and landlords.
Okay.
Very handy. Right. No, right. But you know, you agree with me on that people who just, like, I can't stand noisy eaters, people who go,
no,
like that.
No,
and,
I do agree with that.
And people eating crisps, as I said before, people eating crisps in cinemas.
Well, anyone who's making noise in the cinema, it's an absolute
crime. Are they must be mental. They've gone to see a film, there's people they don't know there, everyone's paid £8.
And they're crunching away.
Oh, leaving their phones on.
I was in the cinema, there was a 16-year-old girl, took a phone call in the cinema, the film was running, she said, and she went, hi, yeah, I'm in the cinema, started having a conversation on the phone. I was thinking, how important is this call
yeah.
that you've got to receive? Oh, yeah. It's Tokyo ringing. Mr. Yakamoto's there. The deal's going through. It's Saturday afternoon. You should be up there hairdressed. I just was so... I was in the cinema.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Yakamoto's coming round tonight, and we can't use my pad, so you've got to make him a meal.
Yes.
Don't you and your wife muck things up for me.
But I was in the cinema. This was not long ago, and I went to see that. I think I was off to see that film, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or whatever it's called. Do you know the
Well, they could be on the phone for that because there's subtitles. So it's not going to ruin it, is it?
Yeah, it wasn't her. I was sat next to another woman. She was crunching, a big fat woman.
No, but he's got a good point there.
Loads of people could be on the phone in there, and it wouldn't sort of niggle you.
Fine. Well, at least we've cleared that.
Imagine if that was true.
Well, it's like when you go on the tube and read a paper. There's loads of noise, but you can still concentrate, can't you?
He's got you. Do you know That's what I mean? Such a great point, isn't it?
Right, yeah, because it's so easy to lose yourself in that magic realism world, you know, with all the sound effects and music and surging, exciting noise, and there's a woman clattering on going, yeah, well, I'll probably meet you later, Stange. Should we get some Diamond White in and around by the park?
Yeah.
Switch off. I do it.
Yeah, but we know what you're like, Carl.
Yeah, you can switch off, Carl.
It's like you can turn your ears off. That's the skill you
have.
Well,
it's not the ears, it's the behind the ears.
Yeah.
It's the process that between the ears and the brain that you can switch off, so we can still hear all these things like a cat.
But I was in the room, there was this woman sat next to me, she was to a big fat one, she was crunching on some popcorn. Again, that's a crime. Why they're selling popcorn in cinemas? I don't understand why why the noisiest food in a cinema?
Yeah.
I don't understand why that's come about.
Yeah.
Really makes me angry.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Smoothies. We want smoothies without straws.
Exactly. The trailer for that film AI, Artificial Intelligence, came on. Remember that? And the tagline was, David is 11 years old. He weighs 60 pounds. He's 4'6" tall. He has brown hair. His love is real, but he is not.
Oh yeah.
And she just went, how old was he again? To her boyfriend. Right? Just ruin it. War film trailer comes on for some Pearl Harbor, so she goes, yeah, don't fancy that. Just announcing this, don't fancy that. Too many war films. So then the trailer, then the opening credit comes on for Crouching Tiger. And we know, well, before that, you know that thing that comes up that says it's signed by the BBFC and it has the kind of certificate and everything, and that certificate to say what age you have to be to see it. That came up, and it said Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, in brackets, subtitles. She went, it's not subtitled, is it? I thought this was the most famous foreign film for years. It won Oscars. It was a huge film. Everyone knew it was foreign. She goes, it went, and it, so the credits begin. It says Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She went, stupid name for a film.
What? She just
she paid it? To see it. She was with her boyfriend. So then it starts, right? And obviously it's in Japanese or Mandarin or something. She's like, yeah, and they're doing they're all talking in Japanese.
Japanese or Mandarin.
Whatever it is. So they're speaking in this, you know, Japanese language, Oriental language. And she's going, don't they sound stupid? Don't they sound stupid? She's going, and then the subtitles come up and it's quite a weird kind of strange language they're talking. And she was going, can't make the subtitles out either. It's both gobbledygook. Just wittering on every step of the film.
I totally agree with you, but what I like in your telling of it, I know you're sort of getting quite
emotional.
I'm
generally livid.
But she went Mandarin or Japanese, some Oriental language. And
well, I don't know what else.
It's a strange language. It's a strange language.
Well, anyway.
Oh, dear.
So then I moved. I climbed over several seats, made a big huff of, you know, make a big show of moving.
Yeah.
Sat next to a guy on the phone, just chatting on the phone.
Oh, I'd have gone mental at that.
Now I hate that film. I didn't enjoy it. I don't like seeing it. I don't want to even think of it.
It's subtitles, isn't it?
Well, rubbish.
It's rubbish.
That's why I get videos.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have thought that through, Carl. You're absolutely right.
Lamb Chop?
Yeah, let's play Lamb Chop. This is brilliant. This is from this CD that came out recently with Uncut magazine. Occasionally they put out some quite interesting free CDs. And this was one that had various covers of Rolling Stones songs. And a lot of them were, you know, quite shoddy. But this was a brilliant, specially done, I think, for the CD. It's Lamb Chop doing a version of quite an obscure Rolling Stones song called Backstreet Girl. It's just beautiful. Let's hear it.
Steve, you got any other toilet-related anecdotes?
Rick, my life is just full of toilet trauma.
Yeah.
And Carl, you may not realise this, but a while back, I used to host... This is bizarre. I used to host a radio show on the BBC World Service, right? Now, if you want someone who's the voice of integrity, the voice of intelligence, the voice of a nation, you're going to come to me. That's obvious. And I was broadcasting... So now, they've got listeners of something like 50, 60 million people around the world. It's mental, the listenership of the World Service. And I used to host this show with someone
else. It's a big place, Steve.
The world?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And anyway, so I had to be into Bush House where they broadcast from, 10 o'clock every Friday morning to broadcast around the world to 50 million people, right? And one week, I just went to the toilet in my house, right? Everyone had left. I got there a bit late. I got up a bit late. Already against me. The clock was already against me. I had to be there at 10 o'clock, broadcast around the world. And we got two toilets in our house, downstairs one, right? And the door had already been a bit dodgy. It was one of those doors where you had to give it a bit of a kick as you went in. It was getting a bit tight. I don't know what the wood was expanding or something. You know, I'm in there. And same thing again happens. No toilet paper. I think, oh, God, I'm going to have to somehow kind of make it up.
Why don't you check first?
I normally do, Rick. I normally do. It's just on certain occasions when I'm bleary-eyed or something, I forget. Or occasionally I forget. Normally I do check.
Right.
And you've got to bear in mind that it's not like this is happening every week. This is over the course of many years that these incidents have accumulated. So
you've condensed them.
For the purposes of this anecdote.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. And... Sure. Great, you're just brilliant. Keeping the pace up of an anecdote there, Rick. You've just drawn in, I don't know where I am now. I know where I am. I'm trapped in a toilet with no toilet paper.
Yeah.
That's where I am. And I'm thinking maybe I peel off some of the wallpaper, you know, things like that, but there's nothing I can do. I've got to go upstairs. Well, exactly, but I've got to go upstairs and find...
Toilet paper, was there any?
There wasn't.
Oh.
I've got to go upstairs and maybe find a notepad or something like that. And so I try the door, right? The door's wedged, and I'm pulling on the door, and I can't get the door open. It's just like it won't come open. And it's already, and I knew it was going to come to this at some point. Like, this is like, the clock's ticking. I'm trying to pull the door open, trousers around my ankles again. And I'm thinking, well, what I could do is I could open the window, I suppose, and like try and climb out. But not really, because I got the trousers around the ankles. And that's
or if it was raining, just stick your ass out, two birds with one stone.
Sadly, it was a beautiful day, Rick.
I call it the World Bee Day.
And so, so what I'm thinking is, well, wonder, I've got my mobile phone in there, luckily, because it's in my pocket. I'm thinking, well, maybe I can phone, I was seriously...
Kleenex.
Maybe I'll phone the fire brigade.
By this point, I mean, it just dried.
No, it hadn't,
Hold on, was that little puppy not around? Because sometimes you can call that, it's got a little bit wrapped around it.
Listen.
Or just use the puppy itself.
There's 50 million people around the world going to need to hear my voice in, 30 minutes.
Exactly. And where's Steve? He's not locked in a toilet again, is he?
Exactly.
Oh, no.
So I'm thinking about phoning the fire brigade, and I'm thinking, if I do that, it's going to be the first call that goes straight on the speakerphone for, the entire fire brigade service everywhere.
With a butch hero carrying you down over his shoulders with your trousers around your ankles. Exactly. Can I just not pull him up? No, you've got to be taught a lesson.
Yeah. But I imagine the idea of a phone up and going, hello there, I'm trapped in a room in my house. Oh yeah, which one is it? Oh, you don't need
small.
To know.
It's quite small. Is it?
Yeah. It's not the toilet, is it? Because we don't want to come and rescue someone who's trapped in the toilet.
Which service do you require? Paper.
So I think I can't find the fire brigade, the clock's ticking. So then I think one of my housemates is still in the house, but still asleep. So I phone the house number, right? Phone rings and rings and rings for ages. And eventually, he answers the phone, right? Gets out of bed, answers the phone, Hi, it's Steve. All right, what's wrong?
What are you doing? All right, yeah. Oh, I didn't wait, I don't know. What are you doing? Oh, I'm just...
In the toilet?
I'm
downstairs in the toilet.
Oh, yeah, what are you doing? Oh, well, I've finished what I'm... Have you got any toilet paper?
Any bog roll?
Yeah.
So he had to kind of scrape together a few bits of paper, you know, and sort of tinfoil or whatever he could find in the house.
A cactus.
Come back
Pass
it underneath the door... Right, and then I said, "Can you move away from the door while I? Because I don't want you to hear me as I'm, you know, wiping the." And so
you
didn't
say that.
Yeah, well, I didn't want him to. You know, that's embarrassing.
What were you wiping it with? Not tumbleweed. What do you mean? What noise?
I know what you mean.
Yeah. No, exactly. Right. So then I say, right, can you smoke?
Why was he hovering? Why didn't he want to walk away? Will you keep your head, what was it, outside with a glass to his ear?
Yeah, yeah. Thankfully, there was a window in the door, but it was frosted glass. Right. You could just see my semi-naked body moving around. And so eventually I said to him, look, listen, I'm going to need you to sort of kick the door in. He's going, I don't want to kick the door in because you're going to have to pay for it, aren't we? I go, yeah, but I got to go to the World Series. Well, yeah. And he was a lovely man. He's the weakest man you've ever come across. It's like if there's one person you don't want to have to throw their body weight against the door, it was him. He's like, he'll snap before the door will. So he's smashing against
the door. This sounds like a fetish to me, then. He went in there and there you were naked with lots of toilet paper. And you go, oh, you've broken the door down and here I am naked. Again.
Oh, you've rumbled me, Rick. I wish I'd not told that embarrassing story on the radio. Like it wasn't embarrassing enough, you've just got to make it slightly more seedy.
So did he get it down?
He did it, yeah, and I got to the World Service with, like, minutes to spare.
Oh.
And interestingly, I told that story to 50 million people around the world.
You're joking.
Yeah. Did they understand?
I think so.
I mean, is that a bit of a problem when you're on the World Service, like, thinking of things that everyone can understand?
Yes.
You can't,
it's a bit like when talking to you. Carl.
Yeah, exactly, Carl. I think you're on thin ice there, worried about people understanding what you're saying.
No, but you can't talk about stuff that's on the telly and that, because some people say, well, we haven't even got a telly here.
Oh, yeah, you're listening to XFM 104.9.
Yeah.
So let's carry on. Let's continue.
Well, absolutely. Well, obviously, Carl was out with me last night, and he saw that I'm, you know, he knows I'm a ladies' man, and that was obvious. Carl, you could see the vibe around me, couldn't you? Mm. When the chicks were talking to me, and just remembered recently, actually, I was on a train coming back from hometown Bristol, and I was on the train, and this girl walks on, good-looking girl. I thought, hey, up, a largely empty carriage. I'm thinking, my luck's in, you know, because I take every opportunity, Carl. That's the thing about me, you know. I don't choose. She was a good-looking girl. She sat down. I thought she sat down right near me. I thought, brilliant. As this guy comes up behind her and says, I think it's probably a boyfriend or something, sits down next to her. And I listened in on the conversation, obviously, because I'm pretending to read. It was very clever. I read the same page for hours. I was pretending to listen. I was listening, but pretending to read. And I realised that it's not her boyfriend or anything. It's just some guy she's met on the platform. And I'm thinking, brilliant. If she's the kind of girl who's just going to start talking to someone, you know, on a platform, on a train, brilliant, I'm going to be in here. Because he was only going one stop. So I'm thinking, what's the worst that can happen? It'll nick off. You know, I'll get chatting to her. You know, and who knows? I could join the... is there a train equivalent?
Foot High Club.
The Foot High Club. Brilliant. And so I'm excited, you know, I'm listening in. And it turns out that they're both kind of graduates who've just finished university, or they're coming to the finals or something. And they're chatting away, you know, and he's making a couple of witticisms, you know. And she's kind of tittering at his jokes. I'm thinking, well, I'll tell you this, if she's laughing at this kind of material, I am going to blow her away, you know, with my kind of anecdotes and wry observations, you know. Yeah. It was weak stuff, I've got to be honest.
Really?
He was coming out with nothing. He was running on empty, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And she was loving it. So I'm thinking, brilliant, I'm going to be right in here. And then they get moving on to higher brow things, you know, and I think she was going to study kind of Marxism or something like that, or communism, something. And she was asking him, you know, by way of conversation, she was asking him what he knew about Marxism, you know. Right. And he was fumbling for some, his vague knowledge of it that he had in his life. And I'm just sat there thinking, yeah, come on, love. In any given capitalist environment, the proletariat will revolt against their oppression.
Wow.
By the bourgeoisie, and after a brief period of socialist rule, emerges a classist society governed by community corporations.
Well, if that sort of talk wouldn't get a woman hot, I don't know what you'd use.
If Marx and Engels is not going to get a woman sweaty down below,
My name is. You're just biding your time. Yeah?
Exactly. I'm just going to go in for the kill any minute. So anyway, it comes to his stop. Right, he gets up. I'm thinking this is a piece of cake, and he gets off, and off he goes. He walks off, and I'm thinking, brilliant. I thought I'll wait till the train's pulled away. I'm not going to leap in straight away.
No.
And he comes back along the carriage, and I'm thinking, hang on a minute. He goes, listen, do you mind if I give you my email address?
Oh.
Right, and if you want to get in touch, email me. I'm thinking, come on, you loser, get off now, save your face, please.
Yeah.
It's too much, and she accepts the email address because she obviously doesn't want to hurt his feelings, whatever. I'm thinking, fair enough, she's a good woman, I'm liking her, I'm loving her, I'm thinking that's my kind of girl. So anyway, he gets off, I'm sat there, the train pulls away, I'm thinking, yeah, I'll wait a few minutes, you know, I'll just, you know, give it some time. Her phone rings, it's her friend on the phone, and she starts saying, and I was listening in, and she was going, yeah, just met a guy on the train. I'm thinking, yeah, that's true enough. She goes, yeah, he was a good looking guy. I thought, you're having a laugh, love. To be honest, because I was looking at him, and she said to her friend, he looks a bit like tennis player Boris Becker. I thought, well, you should be so lucky, frankly, because I saw him. He had awful facial hair, if that's what makes him look like Boris Becker. Terrible little goatee beard. It was laughable. I thought, I don't know. And then she goes to the thing, and she's like, yeah, I met him, we got chatting and stuff. And, you know, and she was going, it's not often that you meet someone, you know, generally in life, who's, you know, kind of thoughtful and intelligent and funny. I thought to myself, I'm not even going to waste my time with you, love. Frankly, if that's what you thought of him.
You just walked away.
And I'll be honest with you, I didn't even bother talking to her.
No, you were
I didn't even waste my time with
her. If she thinks that bloke is not only great
looking,
but funny and intelligent, and she got on well, and he was polite, and it was a chance meeting, and he thought, and she thought that you were like a freaky looking dog who didn't even have the nerve to speak.
If that is what she thinks, then I don't want to know it.
I couldn't. You walked away, and good luck, dear.
And I have my dignity intact.
Yes, and she's nothing.
Well, but no, I have to just say once though. This is about my DJing credentials. I was once playing music at a scout jamboree.
Yeah.
When I was about 16,
big gig.
There was 1,000 scouts there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They were, and I tell you this, we were playing on stuff. They were loving it. They were dancing. It was in a big marquee.
Right.
I slapped on "Smells Like Teen Spirit."
Yeah.
Right.
They went mad.
They went mad for it. They were moshing. They were climbing up the poles. The organisers were going, "Switch that off. Switch that off." Right. They're going crazy. And I was there going, "No, that's what they like. I'm going to do it." And
it was like Footloose.
It was unbelievable. It was just like Footloose. Then I came in with Rage Against the Machine, "Killing in the Name Of." The place went wild.
Yeah.
And they were trying to get me off the decks. It was like Bill Grundy interviewing the Sex Pistols.
And then when the head of the NBA had you killed,
exactly.
Like, that was some sort of mafia thing, and it was all hushed up, that the scouts went there one night with all candles, and they stood by your grave, and that was the end of the film. It was a film, I assume.
You know, this genuinely happened.
I assume this didn't really happen.
Yes, it did. I swear to God, I was playing Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it went wild, and the organisers were going, "Switch that off, they're going crazy," and I was going, "No, it's what they want."
Can I say something?
It was brilliant.
That, to me, I've known you for about 4 years,
yeah.
And I've heard all things. That must be the highlight of your life.
Unbelievably so, yeah.
You've never had anything that good or exciting since, have you?
One day I hope to sleep with a lady. And hopefully that'll it'll slide into second place.
Oh, look, you're actually a little bit stressed there, aren't you? Because you had a drink last night, didn't you?
I had a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
I was down at Steve's night. He was doing a bit of DJ.
Yeah.
Went down a storm.
And that's why you're all grumpy.
What? Do you hear what he just said?
What?
I was DJing last night, obviously that XFM evening.
Yeah, yeah.
Hour and a half. My friend and I split the time on the decks.
Yeah.
What was the word you just used?
He went down a storm.
We went down a storm. Right, three girls, I was walking to the toilets during my set, three girls went, "You are a genius." Right? What's his name? Dane Bowers?
Why?
Zane Lowe?
Because you played records in a certain order.
Yes. No, sorry, Rick. Sorry, Rick, if you can't deal with that. Sorry if you're a little bit jealous, because this time you can't share the award.
Oh, all right? Dear.
But it was my credit this
you
time.
You can tell he hasn't been a DJ. Because it's not just about...
It's not just about that.
The songs you play, it's the way you play them.
Oh,
the way you play them, whether it's 33 or 45, very important.
Yeah, leave your hand on them as they're trying to go round.
But so three girls there, charmed by me. They loved it.
Yeah.
Zane Lowe, XFM DJ and MTV presenter, probably one of the coolest blokes alive. He came up, gave his massive respect. He said, "I'm loving your set." He actually used those words, right? There were people coming up, they couldn't believe their luck. It was roaring. We'd stick on a track, people would cheer as it came on, right? My particular favourite, Carl, I think you'll agree, my particular triumvirate, LL Cool J, "Mama Said Knock You Out," leading straight into "House of Pain," "Jump Around," then straight into that current Elvis track that's been re-released, remixed by Junkie XL. I played the original, which I'd already played on XFM before. I'm already there, cutting edge.
Yeah.
Right?
Three old tracks, you mean?
Three old tracks.
In a row?
Yep. And, I think the words that would best sum it up are, "I kicked ass."
Great.
Rick. All right?
Well, I'm going to be kicking some ass today.
Hey, talking of DJing.
Go on.
You know, I did that storming set the other night for XFM.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Go on.
This was down at a little club, in case you aren't aware of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to the Sony's the other night.
Yeah.
Carl Pilkington sidles up to me, slips me an envelope.
Go on.
Oh, 200 big ones in there.
Did you get paid cash for that?
Yeah. £200. Taxman won't know about that. Cash in hand.
No, the taxman won't know, because, I mean, obviously no one who ever works in tax office is listening to local radio.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, so...
No, the taxman will know about it.
Yeah.
Because I'll declare it.
I would.
Put it... Yeah, it's going straight down. I'll do it when I get home. Do it when I get in later on.
And don't write off rubbish that you buy anyway, like, you know...
No, I won't.
No.
I'll do it all above board, officially. Fill it all in correctly. And so I'll send it now, I'll send it tomorrow, so that you get it early, so it's not too busy for you, sir.
Oh, never mind.
But I just need to mention something quickly to you.
Go on.
When did I last see you? I saw you yesterday, didn't I?
Yeah.
Because we went up to Edinburgh yesterday. We were very nicely invited to go and talk at the Edinburgh International Television Festival. It was quite a big deal. We went up there and we were interviewed. And Ricky chose to go on the train because it takes like 4 hours. Is it 4.5 hours or something on the train?
Yeah.
But it's quite leisurely. It's quite sort of gentlemanly thing to do.
Yeah.
I opted to go for the plane option and fly up there.
More modern.
Exactly. And they bankrolled that. They paid for it all. And that was all not very nice. And as I recall, when I last saw you, we got cabbed, didn't
didn't we? And you asked if you could get the cab to drop you off at the train station.
Yeah.
And then it took me on to the airport.
Yeah.
Did I... Now, that was before... The last time I saw you was before I got to the airport and missed my flight, wasn't it? Because
really?
because I had to drop you off
That's
in the centre of town. Yeah, no, that was just before I had to pay £165 to upgrade to another
How
ticket.
How did you not tell me that in the last hour?
£165, Ricky, I had to pay because we dropped you off at the train station. So, I mean, do you want to go halves on that? Or what do you want to, how do you want to deal with that? How do you want to sort that whole mess out?
Why were you late?
Why was I late? Because we dropped you off in the centre of Edinburgh. And do you know how hard it is to get out of Edinburgh in rush hour traffic?
But it was only 3 minutes away, so you'd have missed it anyway.
No, because if we'd gone the other direction, it would have been 20 minutes. It took me like an hour to get to the airport. And I got there, and the plane had already left, and the cabbie was just laughing. He was saying, we're never going to make it. He goes, you were a religious man. You better start praying. I thought he was being facetious. He was absolutely right. £165.
But hold on. Why didn't he tell you that when he picked up at
well,
quarter past four?
It makes you wonder. So obviously, I'm a little bit annoyed. Because, you know, I'm not a man who likes to sort of spend unnecessarily.
But wait, this is not my fault. Because you were there when we made that decision. I didn't impose this on you. We both decided that might be... It's both our fault. I mean, it's no one's fault.
It's both our fault. That's fair. That's all I wanted to hear. It's both our fault. Therefore, it's both our financial obligation.
No.
£165? Just split that in half. Write a check, Rick. Write a check. It's fine. I trust you.
Yeah. Phone in. I think everyone. This
You're
is.
You're clearly
obvious.
Responsible.
No, of course I'm not. If you share a cab and then one person's lucky enough to not be late and one person is unlucky enough, and that's what it is, bad luck. I don't think you share the obligation. It's a moral dilemma, this, isn't it?
But it's more than that, though, isn't
go
it?
On,
because
what?
Let's be honest.
What?
Even if you had known that I was going to get there late, you'd have wanted me to hang around just so you weren't left around waiting for a train on
your own. No, because I got there.
Because you get bored sitting
there. No, because I got
there.
So
you'd have wanted me to at least got in that car.
I got there way too early. I actually got there about... I was there about 30 minutes
early. Oh, so you made it fine then. That was...
Well, exactly. So, I mean, I did... I sacrificed me hanging around for half an hour so you could get it at 4:15. And the other thing is this. You were going to get it at 4:15 anyway...
Yeah, but I would if I'd gone the other direction and not dropped you off in the centre, I would have been there in time.
Wow, would we? Would we?
Well,
is that true? Wow. Only God knows.
Well, and the cabbie. What I mentioned it to.
So, I'll tell you what'll cheer you up. I'll tell you what's better than £80. I'll tell you what's better than that, shall I?
Go on.
Music.
What, are you paying the whole £165
for? Listen, look, I've brought in a little track here.
Right.
Bruce Springsteen off the Tunnel of Love album. And I know you're a Springsteen fan.
I'm a Springsteen fan. We should just qualify this, because a lot of people who listen to XFM obviously a bit edgy about Springsteen. They just think he's this old, kind of ludicrous 80s rocker, the bandana, you know, the flying the flag, which he never really was.
No, that was Bon Jovi.
Exactly,
don't confuse
Bon Jovi. But seriously, no, do you know what I mean? He did write some great music in the 70s,
yeah.
And he's just got a little bit kind of pompous in the 80s, but he still turned out some amazing tunes, one of which I imagine is this one, Rick.
This one's called Brilliant Disguise.
Yeah. What about, are you a fan of any of the great English operas, like The Pirates of Penzance?
Yeah, Gilbert and Sullivan. To me, Gilbert and Sullivan were like the probably... Their day equivalent of like Richard Stilgo getting together with Tony Slattery, and then 100 years later, people go, it's brilliant. It is like they might as well, I don't know, make any episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway,
right? Yeah,
into an opera, and in 200 years' time, we're going, that's genius.
Yeah,
listen to this one. Look, this is Party Quirks.
Yeah, Amdram Society, stage we're step. Because I was in the Pirates of Penzance once in an amateur production.
You used to like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
I did, that was
Although
yeah,
I did watch it when it first came on Channel 4 about 15, 20 years ago.
But we did the Pirates of Penzance when I was in an amateur dramatic society in Bristol, the Bristol Operatic Society, Light Operatic Society. I don't know why I was involved, because I can't sing. My audition, I thought, this is how desperate they were for blokes. I swear to God, right, I can't sing, you know.
Well, you.
Yeah, well, all right, calm down. And I went in and they said, so what are you going to sing? I went, I want to surprise you. They said, do you want a piano accompaniment? I said, no, I don't think so. I went to the back, I swear to God, I went to the back of the room and I just sang, Thumbelina, Thumbelina, tiny little thing, Thumbelina dance, Thumbelina sing, Thumbelina, what's the difference if you're very small? Because when your heart is full of love, you're 6 feet tall. I just did that, And they just looked at me like I was the weirdest freak they'd ever had. Immediately put me in the chorus, because that was how desperate they were for blokes. We staged it, we rehearsed it. I couldn't remember the lyrics.
Thank God you were doing Thumbelina.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't remember the lyrics.
What was it for? Was it Gilbert and Sullivan?
It was the Pirates of Penzance. Oh. There weren't enough blokes, right, so that we had to double up. So some of the pirates had to double up as the policemen who were chasing the pirates. A little bit problematic in the scene when the policemen and the pirates have a fight. That was a little bit tricky. And the worst things, there's a sequence where like the daughters of the major general all kind of like, oh, beautiful, something like, you know, oh, beautiful little girls are we, la 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 la. And the women they had, they must have all been over 40. I mean, real kind of toothless crones creeping around in their 90s.
Is it the sort of women that buy one of those sort of porcelain dolls from the TV and go, look, I've had a baby. It's not a real baby. It is a real baby. You, I'm going to stab you.
Yeah.
One of those.
Exactly. It's the sort of women that you'd see maybe on TV's Bargain Hunt. You know, the kind of contestants you get on there. Those are women who sort of, they're in Amdram and they think they've clung on to their looks, but they'd have never made it in the guy who was playing there's a guy who's supposed to be an 18-year-old prince, an 18-year-old pirate, the Pirate King. He must have been 40 things a day. He also directed the show though, so he got to prance around in these thigh-high boots. Ludicrous. It was so embarrassing. It was shameful, really.
I'd love to go to Amdram.
Amdram is a whole other world. It's such an incredible place. Because there's so much backbiting and envy and...
Really?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, it's worse than the real world of theatre and TV. It's unbelievable. Because the same old people get to do it every year because they can hold a note.
We go along?
You would absolutely adore it, Gervais.
It is absolutely blinding.
Did I ever tell you about the time that my father, when I was younger, we went on holiday, my dad bought a little boat. Little sort of wooden boat, make a three-seater, and he and a friend of his went out with me in the boat. I was maybe 12 or 13. Went out, and we sort of went, da-da-da-da-da. So, well, I think we had the little motor, outboard motor, chugging out. We just thought, we thought this was real seafaring stuff.
Brilliant.
We'd lost sight of the beach because we'd gone round a corner of like a mountain, or like a, what do you call it, like a cliff. And so we just round the corner, and there was this boy, like just floating in the water. Not a boy, but you know, like a boy. And, very tricky to explain that on the radio. It's the same word, isn't it?
Boy.
And so we float past that and we're just chugging along. The motor conks out. Oh, I can't believe it. We have to row back in. So they're rowing away. I'm just sat there. And we noticed that every time we sort of think we've got past this buoy, it just seems to be back where it started again. And we realised that the tide is taking us towards these rocks. And we've just got ravaged rocks. And we were a bit pretty scared because I can't swim very well. I couldn't at the time. I think my dad had maybe bought, you know, he didn't, I'll be honest with you, I inherited a lot of things from him, one of which was his carefulness with money. just the one life jacket.
How deep was the water?
Which I seem to remember he tore off my back and put on himself. So the water's pretty deep. I mean, I'm not saying we would have necessarily died, but it was pretty scary because the boat, you know, we were going to crash into these rocks and stuff. It was getting pretty unnerving. And so they're sort of rowing like mad, trying to get, we're just not making any progress. And we're beginning to think that this might be the end. And this boat, this kind of ferry boat comes chugging by doing tours. Ching, 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 ching. And it comes by and my dad goes, oh, wow. We were going, brilliant, brilliant. They can help us. They'll throw us a rope. They'll tow us back in. He was going, you've got to be careful though. Hang on. Because according to the laws of the sea, if he rescues us, Steve, he can claim my boat. The laws of the sea mean he can claim my boat as salvage.
I love the idea of
that's like the reward. What I like is his 12-year-old son might die. He's thinking about the boat.
I know, but also the other thing, of course, is that I like the idea of this ferry master going, arr.
Yeah.
The boat be mine now, exactly. Or take your son.
Yeah.
Let me think about it.
I need a new bed. That'll be just right. King size.
Oh, dear, that's lovely.
I have to say, this is such a terrible confession. When I was doing a school play once, when I was about that age, 15, right, there was a girl who was in the cast with me, right, and she sort of, you know, she was giving me the eye. I was thinking, yeah, well, I kind of thought she was, right? And
it was glass.
But there was another guy. There was another guy there as well. I was sort of competing for her affections.
Oh, no.
And he was quite a witty guy.
His name was Scott Hansen. He had long blonde hair.
Exactly, yeah. And I thought, well, the way to impress her, because I was 15 or whatever, I thought I was pretty smart. I sat in one of the adjoining dressing rooms reading a copy of the philosophical book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which I didn't understand, but which I sat there reading it in the hope that she would walk in and think, my God, you're reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
You don't go with the crowd. You don't want to come next door when we're talking about nonsense and people are flirting.
We're talking about the bangles and curly whirlies.
You're in here saying, look, just if you want to come and talk to me, you're welcome. But I'm not.
I'm a thinker.
I bet you thought you were Kwai Chang Kane, didn't you?
I thought it was like she'd think, Jesus Christ, I've never met anyone like him.
That is genius.
And I remember the one time she accidentally walked in, she went, oh, sorry, wrong room, and left again. And that was it.
Sorry, at 15, so this is about the time you took to wearing a bow tie to impress people.
I'm slightly younger wearing a bow tie.
I love that.
No, I used to watch a lot of Harold Lloyd films. And he always seemed to do very well.
I love it. I love the idea of at 15 you going, well, it's time I went a-wooing. Right. Right, on with the bow tie. Where's the zen?
Where's the pipe and my bow tie?
It's a time I got me a bow.
Yeah.
I love that. But songs are great as well. The other thing you do sort of when you're about 15, 16 is start writing songs about, like, the world's trying to take a piece of me. Hey, you think I'm going down? I'm coming back. I'm against the ropes. Yeah. They try to drag me down. It's like you want to be cool Han Lu. Yeah. They put me in this emotional prison.
The man's on my back.
Who? They try and take a piece of me. Who? Who do? Well,
you're 14.
Parents and that, don't they?
You're really comprehensive.
The teachers. Yeah. I absolutely love it. I still remember a poem. I'll not say his name. We're about 14, 15. And we had to write a poem. And obviously everyone's was pretty rubbish. But we mercilessly took the piss out of this bloke because I still remember the poem. And how he did it is he went through a dictionary and found things with it. And this is a poem, right? Okay, remember? I've remembered this for 25 years, right? The reason why I had to die. Did I bleed the blood of greed? What was my destiny? And when we hear this, we were laughing. I mean, for a year, we would go, what was my destiny? It was just great.
Can I hear it again? I enjoyed it.
The reason why I had to die. Did I bleed the blood of greed? What was my destiny?
Oh, that's almost as catchy as Monkey News.
Oh, God! Oh, I've got some Monkey News for you. Let's play a record and come back and I've got some great Monkey News for you, Carl.
But, because when I was younger, I remember being outside a post office once when I was about 10 or 12 and finding a purse. And thinking, oh, that's nice. And opening it up, there was some money in there and a pension book. And so it was obviously an old lady. I found an address. I sent it to her. And my mum said, you know, you've been so good there, you'll probably get a little reward. She'll probably send you a little reward. Nothing. I got maybe a thank you note, but no cash, no moolah, nothing.
Really?
And I was livid because I'd been told that I was going to get a reward. I thought I've been a good Samaritan, nothing. So many moons later, when I was at university, I learnt from that. And this is the most bizarre thing.
This explains a lot, doesn't it, Carl?
This is like the Mary Celeste. I went to a cash point to put my... I thought, I can't get my card in here. And I realised there was already somebody's card in the machine. They put the code in, but then they just disappeared. They'd been kidnapped or something. So it was just there, waiting, sitting. It said, what do you want to do? And it gave you a number of options. I thought, interesting.
Steal or go to heaven?
Yeah, exactly.
He went, oh, dear.
Well, I pressed balance. Just to check what their bank balance was.
Unbelievable.
It was a considerable sum of money. I'm not going to lie to you. It was not typical student debt. It was like, I think they were a foreign student. There was a lot of cash in there, a lot of money.
Did you feel a slight bulge in your trousers when you saw the amount of money?
I couldn't believe my luck. I thought to myself, now then, I could just take that card out and hand it in, or I could teach them a small lesson.
Right.
And maybe give myself a reward, because last time I did that, I didn't get a reward. So if I give myself £30, then I'll take the card out.
30?
Give myself 30.
You didn't really?
Well, I thought that's a good reward. And I went in, I handed the card in, I took
that
thing. And that's a little reward for me. And I'll tell you this, don't think it's evil, because I went in and I bought everyone a drink.
Well, brilliant.
Yeah, I didn't tell them I got the money free.
Well done. Excellent.
So probably
gangsters are quite generous. With the money they stole from other people.
Yes, but someone's negligence, Rick, has lent... The thing is this,
Steve,
right?
I believe it, except that buying people a drink, Carl. What do you think?
Well, I kind of thought that when he said it, but then I thought, but they'll be buying one him back.
So he's still...
So in a way, he's still a winner.
Yeah. Everyone's a winner in that situation, including the student, because frankly, if there had been a less scrupulous person who found it, they'd have probably helped themselves to a considerable sum.
I cannot believe he did that.
There was thousands and thousands of pounds in there.
What if Beadle had jumped out and slapped you with his little claw and said, we've been filming this merchant?
Well, what? So what?
How old were you then?
I don't know, 19, 20?
Would you do it again, or was it just to get the world back for the old lady's purse?
possibly do it again, yeah.
You're joking.
Well, you've got to think of it this way. You've got to think of it as there was a lot of money in there and someone less scrupulous than me would have taken a fortune. They'd have cleaned them out. Whereas I just took a small reward, which I thought was more than enough for someone's negligence. And I've returned the card. They've got the card back. Everything's fine. Think of someone else. I could have gone on a spending spree. I could have been buying stuff, all sorts.
Yeah, but it wasn't yours at all.
Yes, they probably would have given me a reward. And because, you know, sometimes people forget or, you know, they don't give you a reward, I thought I should
take
it myself.
He had to go at your dad for nicking a loaf of bread out of a phone box.
Yeah, but that's because it's for old people, geriatrics and stuff.
How do you know how old was your people you were robbing from?
It's a student on a student campus.
Hmm. Well.
Wow.
I thought it was excellent behaviour. I thought it was good, honourable behaviour.
That's shown another side to him, isn't it?
What would you have done, Carl, in that situation? And tell the truth.
I might have helped myself a little bit.
This is helping yourself a bit.
Like you say, just sort of, you know, send it in back and sort of say, you know.
If you find a pound coin in the street and you can be bothered to bend over for it, then have it. But someone's Cashpoint card or personal belongings.
I'd let them know, though. Did you send it to them and say, I've service charge included? I've took that out already.
I handed it in to the.
Let them know.
I'd say, you know, you're lucky here, right? I just took, I'd probably said 20, actually, because okay. That's just like one note.
Sorry, right, okay. You are winding me up.
No, I'm not. I mean, not for once. I mean, I know what Steve's like. He is tight, right? He is. And you know that, don't you, Steve?
I mean,
just the way you are, you're very sort of, you know, you're not wasteful with your money.
I'm careful. No, I'm not wasteful. Absolutely right.
No, but to the extreme.
Not towards the extreme.
No.
Look after the pennies. The pounds will take care of themselves. All right? Simple to remember. Good advice.
Yeah,
all right?
But the thing is, right, I know that I took the mickey out of you for, like, you know, the way you look and stuff.
Sure. Right? Well, I'm right back at you.
But the thing is, you can't help that.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you something that women don't like.
Sure.
And it's fellas who are tight with the money.
Sure. I'm not frugal with money with ladies. I'm frugal with money with you.
Well,
I've got no reason to splash money out on you.
I've never seen you splash money out.
Well, you've never been out with me.
Have you ever, Steve, splashed out on a lady?
No, but I hope to one day. The right lady.
Play a record.
Sorry, just suddenly struck me something. I don't know if I mentioned it before. You mentioned you tried to catch your guy out when you came back once. You opened the door really quickly to see what he was up to. Did I ever tell you when I was at university? Now, I'm very tall and I've got enormous feet. Size 14 shoes. And when I was at university, everyone, it seemed to me, was wearing Dr. Martens. It was like you had to wear a pair of Dr. Martens. It was kind of the rule.
Dr. Martens was big for you.
Yeah, so that's a big pair of Dr. Martens. That's like... That's where the myth of the old woman who lived in a shoe, I think, came from. People with my size shoes. Anyway, I just literally kind of moved to university. I'd been there for like literally a couple of months. And obviously in that first period, you're quite keen to kind of, you know, reinvent yourself, be, you know, strike yourself, you know, try and give an impression of perhaps being quite sophisticated, worldly, cool. All those things that, you know, you've left behind all your childhood friends. So you're trying to, you know, develop something.
But you didn't bother.
What, sorry?
You didn't bother?
No, I was working hard on it, and I was kind of, you know, I was doing all right, you know, and I had a tie-dye shirt, you know, I was looking good. And, so I was trying, you know, working hard to try and seem kind of cool and not freakish. And, I came back from studies once, and I came in, and there was a little old cleaning lady that kind of would always come in every day and clean up our halls of residence, and I came back, and my door of my room was open, and there was like a little huddle of people just peering in, right? And I thought, this is odd, you know, that my door's open and I'm not in there, and there's people staring in the door. And I looked in, and the little cleaning lady had my Dr. Martens on and was clomping around.
Making them all laugh.
Doing an impression of me.
That's amazing.
Imagine the psychological scars that has.
I know that she's more popular than you.
Yeah, exactly.
And they go, come on, Maud, let's go to the JCR. Exactly. And they carry her down. They go, drink. And she goes to, Steve, you better have that spotless by the time I come back. You go, all right, I will. All right.
But what I like is the fact that I'm sure that that's not part of the cleaner's code. The cleaner's code is you don't have the keys to everyone's room so you can go through their belongings and... and play practical jokes. I mean, surely it's a kind of, you know, it's a trust.
She must have looked like a wall bracket. I went bowling with him once the first time, and we went bowling at his place. Where was it? I mean, Finsbury Park. Mm. And I'd never been before. And he's got to wear special shoes. I went, all right. He went, so-and-so. He goes, have you got size 14? And she went, yeah, I've got one pair. And she put them on the table, and they look like crusty. Honestly, honestly, it looked like the heart. It was, I just started laughing because they're so long and thin anyway. And they're multicolored, aren't they? They're two colors. And it looked like Krusty the Clown's feet. And then this teacher just went, all right. 14. That is big, isn't it?
It's a huge size shoe. You're right.
Yeah. And it was just the one cleaner in them. Just the one, sadly.
She did have loads of kids eventually and brought them up in there.
You were talking about renting an office. I'm a little bit intimidated because I'm just at the moment thinking about trying to buy a flat or something because I'm just tired of pissing money down the drain.
I know. Yeah.
And, but I'm really petrified. I've put it off and put it off because I'm really gullible. When I'm confronted with anyone in a suit who sort of knows what they're talking about, they can sell me anything. I'm intimidated. It's like, you know, you're supposed to go in there and you're supposed to sort of act like you're the guy with the money. This is what I want. This is what I want. No. But I go in there and it's like, I'm afraid they're going to say, clear off. I don't want to sell you out. I'm not really interested.
Have you ever thought of like really putting on sort of like some sort of cool air? Like kicking the door and going, what's that? Is it like, you'd be found out in 30 seconds, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
You'd go in there, you'd stub your toe, and they go, what are you giving? I've hurt my toe.
Exactly, yeah.
Brilliant.
Just tapping the walls.
Yeah, tapping the wall. What's the rates on? What rates? I don't know.
I don't know if I told you before, I wanted to buy a laptop computer, and everyone said, go up Tottenham Court Road, and I was reading like magazines and stuff. They were saying, you're planning to haggle, get the best deal you can. And I found a shop which was selling the computer I wanted, and I went in there, and I had this whole plan in my mind of what was going to happen. He was going to say, like, it's worth this. I'm going to go, well, look, I can get it cheaper here. I want to buy it from you. I'm going to haggle, da-da. And off I went. So I went in the shop, and I said, yeah, looking for this, interest in this Toshiba. How much is it? He went, oh, it's 1,500 quid. I went, sure. Okay. I said, I'll give you 1,300. He went, it's 1,500. And I said, sure, but I'm willing to give you 1,300. He went, 1,500. And I was done already because he hadn't even begun to haggle. And I was assuming he'd at least go 1,400 and we could start, but nothing. So now I was screwed. My whole plan went out the window.
Yeah. Well, you just leave.
No, I said to him, I said, the thing is, I can get this computer cheaper down the road, but, you know, I like what you're providing here. I like your service. I've had good stuff about you. It was amazing. I said, I've heard good stuff about you. And he went, I said, seriously, I can walk down the street. I can buy it there for cheap for like 1,400. And he went, well, see you later then. And I was like, right. So I walked out the place. I said, well, I'm going to have to leave then. And I walked out the place, and of course I wanted to get it from there because it was still the cheapest. So I had to walk back in again. I went, yeah. I've just had some second thoughts. Listen, I'll tell you what. I'll pay the 1,500. Can I get a free carry case? He went, the carry case is free anyway. I said, I'll take it.
Carry case is free.
I got
anyway.
Nothing.
No, but how much would you charge for that if it was on sale? Carry case, a tenner. Well, let's just say it is a tenner. Give it to me for free. And he went, no, it's a tenner. And he went, well, you said it was free a minute.
Yeah. It's just pathetic.
That is lovely.
It's having to walk out making a big statement and then come back in again.
Oh, dear.
So I'm really scared. I feel like I need someone to come with me and do all the talking. You know what they're talking about, because I'm not going to be able to tell if there's subsidence or if there's damp or.
Maybe you don't do that,
don't I? Is that not my responsibility?
No, you get a survey done.
Sure.
And they charge for that, and then you don't have to go around doing it yourself.
Right. Could I make a saving if I did it myself?
Yeah, this should be all right. Yeah. There's a hole in the wall, Steve.
Yeah,
but what's a hole in the wall?
Put some newspaper
in
that.
In Chaucer's day, that was the toilet. That'd be fine.
I tell you, you're going to go along later to the Live 8 gig and you're probably going to see some bands that are going to make an effort to entertain you. But if you want entertainment, Rick, you know it.
Go on.
There's only one person to book.
Go on.
Me. I'm obviously a top DJ on the radio, but where I really come into my own is DJing in any kind of club environment.
Well, you told me you were DJing, I didn't go to it, DJing at a party, and you said the place was rocking.
The place was roaring.
And I loved it. Carl just said he was there and they weren't.
Well, that's nonsense, Carl, because you know very well that when I'd put on a tune, they'd cheer.
Yeah, but it was late on in the night, they would have done that, whatever you put on.
That's nonsense.
No, they were happy and everything. I'm not saying they weren't having a good time. It was your party. It was all right, but they weren't going mental like you're sort of making up.
They were definitely going mental. Nah, when I put on the Proclaimers, they could not believe their luck.
Yeah.
They would have walked 1,000 miles.
Was it good though? Was he? Were they really? What were they doing? Were they dancing? They were dancing, were they?
It's dancing and that, but they weren't sort of cheering, going, you know, more and all that at the end.
Wait a minute.
Oh,
Take
wow.
On Me came on, the big cheer went up.
Oh, I don't know who to believe.
I've been there, done it, Steve. I've been the DJ as well.
Oh, it might be jealousy. It might
I think
be like
professional
a,
jealousy there.
Like a, yeah.
I think it's because my fortunes are on the up and these are on the down. You know, we all know famously that he had
Pilkey's making music
his
happen.
DJ outfit.
Didn't happen.
I did enough. I just wanted to do enough to pay for the equipment. And I did. And that was that. But I don't like crowds, do I?
But you're safe, aren't you? You're behind the little thing with the flashing lights.
But I don't, there's still a lot of people and that. Forced fun. Don't like that.
Forced fun.
It's not forced fun. They haven't got to dance if they don't want to dance.
Yeah. Don't like it.
What do you mean your fortunes are on the way up? Anyway, DJ, where were
you?
Well,
I tell you, I was hired. Well, I say hired. I did it as a favour to a friend, his wedding the other week. And I got there. I was thinking, yeah. Because I, you know, everyone was lit. Everyone had their little role to play. And then people were doing a good job.
I love you taking it seriously.
And I did. I spent ages putting together some CDs. Special selection CDs.
I love that.
Because what I did was I burned them on iTunes.
Did you turn up with your own headphones around your neck?
Own headphones, wearing a suit, but headphones.
Metal case.
Didn't need it. Just had them all in one small box.
Brilliant.
Boom. I thought this is good stuff. I got some classics here.
Give me an example. Give me an example of that, like the first hour, the warm-up hour.
Rick, I'm coming straight in with Frankie Valli, Oh What a Night.
Brilliant track.
I mean, when those beats start at the beginning, who's not getting on the dance floor? Wait a minute, what's this following up?
Go on.
It's the Jacksons.
Well, I Want You Back.
I Want You Back.
Brilliant. It sounds good at the moment, Carl. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, at least I'm gonna roar this, but because you know they laid on a good spread, the ceremony was nice, food was nice. I'm thinking this is gonna be the piece de resistance.
Yeah.
Alarm bell started ringing.
Why?
When I realised there was a marquee outside. Of course, it's a balmy summer evening. I'm stuck inside on the dance floor inside. I'm thinking I'm gonna be struggling here to get them in. Even with flavours like this, I thought I'd struggle, Rick. So I'm sat there in my suit. I'm sat behind the still DJ console. I've got all the big numbers. It's one or two people making some token effort, but frankly, most people are outside everywhere.
Oh, no.
At the time. I was livid. Of course, they couldn't hear it out there. So I was playing to an empty room, really, and I was furious. I was absolutely furious. Because,
oh,
I mean, what is, you know, they're wasting my time. They're wasting, now I could have just stuck the CD on.
They're
and
wasting
there,
Frankie Valli's.
Wasting Frankie Valli's
they're
time.
Wasting the Jackson 5's
they're
time.
They're wasting, you know, D-Light's time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm sat there, and there's not really, there's a couple of people making a cursory effort, mainly when they come to get a drink from the bar. They might have a little quick, you know, couple of two.
Are you sure? We don't want your
not interested.
All of you are no one at all.
And then there's a microphone set up because people have been doing speeches. This little girl gets on the mic, right? It's being funneled through the speaker system. So every time I put my headphones on...
Miss Dynamite, was it?
It wasn't, sadly, Miss Dynamite. Although she decided to have a little go at emceeing. She was screeching her little head
How
off.
How old is she?
Oh, I don't know, 8 or 9. At their most annoying. When children are their most annoying, because they've got a bit of confidence there. They're a bit cocky. They're not shy anymore. They're a bit arrogant.
Yeah.
She's screeching her head off. So I'm playing, you know... And she doesn't know
it. Your face!
I'm playing Into the Groove. No one's getting into the groove because she's going mental. She's just going, what's this? What's this? I don't know what this is. Play something I know. I'm thinking, I haven't got any bloody DJ Otsu or Crazy Frog. I'm not going to play what you... So she's just screeching along, ruining it for everyone. I say everyone, there was no one there. So me, she was ruining it for me.
I thought you were really angry.
I'm furious. But of course, as well, every time she screeched, it went through my headphones. So, of course, I'm... And then her dad comes along, right? And I'm thinking, all right, he's seen what's happening.
I just imagine you in your suit, sweating, getting annoyed at someone ruining your set that no one's listening to.
I think, her dad's coming over. He's going to put pay to this. He's realised that, you know, she's causing a disturbance. He comes over there, joins in.
No.
Sits her on the on his lap. He's just saying, hey, she's having a whirl of a time. I'm thinking I'm furious. I'm thinking it's his responsibility to shut her up. He's not going to do anything.
What can I do?
I can't step in.
No.
And I know very well that if I interfere, he's going to say, oh, well, she's enjoying herself and no one's dancing anyway. And we've just got into a fracas.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to start a fight.
No. Because I don't know, but he'd have knocked you out, wouldn't he?
Someone would have got knocked out. And I'm not saying who it would have been, but, you know, but to bear in mind, Rick, there would have been two of them. And, so I didn't want to get into a fight with him. And, anyway, so I'm playing. Anyway, so my friend came along, he realised what was happening, and I didn't have the guts to unplug the microphone, because he'd have known, you see.
Yeah.
So I got my friend to do it when she had her back to me. So he pulled the plug out, the microphone went dead. She went, what's going on? I went, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, I don't know. She said, where the microphone's at? I said, you must have broken it. I don't know what's going on. Someone will probably make you pay for that. And anyway, at least we shut her up.
That is great.
But it really went from bad to worse. And you know, there's that thing when you panic, you start panicking. So you're putting on a lot of flavours that you would have saved till the last hour.
What are we talking? Boom, boom, shake, shake.
Exactly. Then? You're throwing him in early. Love Shack's coming on way too soon.
Really?
Oh, Love Shack before 11. It's heresy, but I had to do it. But anyway, in the end, I made the bride go and get some people in. I said, look, it's your special night, all right, and they're going to enjoy this.
I'll be honest, love, this is a washout, and it's up to you to turn this wedding around, or I'm walking,
and I tell you, they're going to have a sour memory of this evening, unless you bring some people in.
Yeah, so go and get everyone in dancing.
So she got them in at the end, and I'll tell you this, Carl, I mean, I don't know what you say, but they were loving it. They were absolutely loving it. A bloke came over and said, have you got Amarillo? I said, no, but I put on something even better, Delilah. I mean, wedding crowds always go for Delilah. A song, of course, about old man killing his wife. But it always goes down very well, strangely, at weddings. Yeah. They get into a sort of hokey-cokey thing. They went berserk for it. And I was following it up with, I had the monkeys, I had all sorts going on.
Brilliant.
Of course, you know what happens. What? I'm going great guns. People are absolutely loving it. They're rocking it. I throw in, I had something cracking on at the end. Come On, Eileen, of course, was on. People were going berserk for it.
Which is unfortunate, because the bride's name was Eileen.
And then the bride pipes up. I'm throwing the bouquet. So they all traipse off outside again. Oh. I was furious.
Oh, no.
I plugged the microphone back in. I said, what are you doing? We got, you know, but they went out. Then, of course, you can't get them back once they've done that, because all the women are running around. I got the you know, thing. Oh. And then they got to wave everyone off, throw the confetti.
They ruined your day.
I was having a great time and they ruined it.
She ruined your special day.
She ruined my special night.
Oh, no.
You know, it's on her head.
What would you put on about now, Carl?
What if it was DJing?
Yeah.
Probably a bit of world party.
Go on, then.
Interesting.